It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC, coming to you throughout the New York, New Jersey metro area and beyond. I mean, 77 WABC has an incredibly powerful signal, 50,000 watt channel. You know, we're coming to you in the entire area. And of course, worldwide through the app, 77 WABC, and online at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. Thank you, New York. Consistently, we come in the top 10 according to the Nielsen ratings in New York AM radio for this hour. It is a great honor, a privilege, and a responsibility to come to you with great content, great guests, week in and week out. This week is no different. But I'm going to keep you in suspense a little bit longer because that's part of radio, right? So we'll just, you know, a little suspense here. We have a crazy guest, an amazing guest who's going to share really great content about the real estate industry as it stands here today. But we'll fill you in on that in a minute or two. Special thank you to all the guests over the last few weeks. We've been airing, starting going back into November, where we were featuring the interviews that I did at Kosher Fest. That entire episode, it was broken up under three shows. You can access it by going to mybradio.com, mybradio.com. And there's even an entire podcast with every single last episode, every last interview during those shows. Every single week we feature, you know, again, a great guest and such a wide range of business subjects, including sales, social media, corporate culture, leadership, strategic planning, financial planning, marketing and advertising, customer retention, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid advice to get you ahead in today's business world. Well, as we do each week, we open with some thank you. Special thank you to the great team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, Srili, Michal, Miriam, Dina, Malka, and so many others, Tova, all who play such an important support role for the success of this show. And a special shout-out to the great team at 77 WABC, James, Chris, Tim, Matt, thank you. I'd also like to give a special shout-out to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on. We have a very robust YouTube channel. It's like a virtual university. You could go to any business subject that interests you, you go to Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis on YouTube. There's probably a video there for free that you can access and learn about anything you need to get caught up on. We have a channel on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, the OG Podcast Network, Player.fm, C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV. The list goes on and on. You can access every single episode by going to mybradio.com, mybradio.com. And before I go to my guests, just a thank you to some of the amazing guests that we've had on this program. Joseph Abud, the noted fashion design icon. John Scully, the former CEO of Apple and Pepsi, Dr. Adrian Boise, the Chief Experience Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. I mean, how many, Joe Hart, the President and CEO of Dale Carnegie. The list goes on and on. All amazing guests, great content. And again, it's what you've come to expect, and that's what keeps our Nielsen ratings pretty high. Without further ado, going to tonight's guest, Jack Friedler of Cityview Commercial. Just a little bit of background about Jack. Cityview Commercial is a full-service real estate redevelopment firm operating in roughly, 18 states nationwide. So they're kind of coast-to-coast. They operate nationwide. They've been in business for two decades. Cityview Commercial owns and manages all types of properties, malls, street assets, strip centers. That's those malls that have alongside in the road. You find them in rural areas. They own 1,000 plus units throughout northern New Jersey and Philly. Their co-managing partner also is a leading national urban apparel and footwear chain of 200 stores in 18 states. Other notable purchases were the Strand Hotel and the Herald Square Hotel, which is a stone's throw from here at Stage 17 at 77 WABC. Without further ado, Jack Friedler from Cityview Commercial. Thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
You're very welcome. Pleasure to be here.
So, can I ask you anything?
You could ask me anything.
All right.
Whatever you ask, I'm here.
All right. Folks, what should I ask? Okay, now. Now, let's talk about, let's go straight into it. As you know, we do a lot of research before every single show that we do. The last few weeks, Wall Street Journal, he had a cover story right after Black Friday. Okay, the cover story, and then on their caption over here is, the majority of retail purchases are still made in stores, but online sales are surging. Here's another article, a tale of two malls, one that's very successful and one that's barely making it. Distress, as you would call it. Then there's another article about the mall in Bal Harbour in Florida. Luxury malls expand to pursue younger, less affluent customers. We're going to discuss all this because this is really what's on everyone's mind. How to be successful. Yes. Let's jump right in. The retail apocalypse, right? That's what it's been called. What's your take on that? Can retail survive as brick and mortar?
So let's discuss retail apocalypse. Apocalypse usually means the end of something, so I wouldn't call it a retail apocalypse. This is not the end, but this definitely feels like an apocalypse. If you look at the number of stores that usually close every year and the numbers of stores that are closing now, there's a big jump in store closing. So in 2006, 2007, the data says that under 4,000, 2,000 to 4,000 stores closed. In 2008, when there was a big recession, somewhere in the area of 6,000 stores closed. In 2017, close to 14,000 stores closed. So now, you know, we're moving forward from there. You go to 2018, 2019, 2020. So apocalypse it is. It feels apocalyptic. It does. It feels like there is a lot of retailers leaving the market. There's a vacuum. There's not a lot of retailers to take their places. Mm-hmm. So you see the market shrinking, and it's something that's very real.
Now, so I'm just going to come at you with this, Ray. You said I could ask you any questions.
Yes, any question.
Okay. So is there a future in brick and mortar?
Yes. And I brought two very interesting quotes that some of my mentors have taught me. And the two quotes that stuck with me, quote number one, physical retail isn't dead, boring retail is. Number two, the good news is that innovation is radically changing retail. The bad news is that innovation is radically changing retail. So the end of the day, boring retail is dead. You know, I always speak about Sears and how embarrassing they are as a company. I used to have a few of them in my portfolio. But everybody knew Sears was dead for many, many years already. And you see that going across the department stores. So you need department stores and retailers need to become relevant today. The world is changing dramatically. And if you're boring and you're not bringing the customer into your store, through many different things that we'll discuss later on in the interview, you're not going to compete in today's retail environment because now retail is a lot online and online is a lot in the stores. So you have a lot of mix between the both.
Okay, now, of course, we are going to discuss it in greater detail, but in one word, you would say it has to be an experience, an engaging experience. That's two words. An engaging experience in order to survive as a mall.
Yes, indeed. But an experience alone is not enough, and I'll explain why. Because if everyone's shopping at home, and you could have the greatest experience in the store, if you're not bringing the customers from online, then what's happening is you're just a retail store. You're not going to be able to attract enough sales for your store.
Okay, so now jumping in, how are retailers reacting to this massive shift over the last 10 years, roughly?
Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Yeah. Amazon walloped the retailers, okay? Mm-hmm. Amazon comes out with this amazing technology. You don't have to wait online. You don't have to put in your credit card information. It's one website, one common website. So Amazon walloped the retailers, okay? So all of a sudden, retailers' sales are declining. Stores are closing at number rates. What happened? They call it the Amazon-Walmart showdown. Yes, the Amazon-Walmart showdown. You know, they say it's always good to be number two because you're always chasing number one. When you're number one, you have nobody to chase. So I would say, yeah, Amazon took the front road, and they're doing great. But then Walmart figured out, hey, if we don't become relevant, we don't do something, they're going to just totally obliterate us. So firstly, Walmart started looking at their strengths. What strengths does physical,
what did they
retail
bring to the
have,
table?
Brick and mortar right. have over online? So obviously they have locations. They have stores. So the stores bring them an identity. It brings them the customers. People know who they are as opposed to an online giant. There's nothing that really represents them. There's nothing that really brands them. So number two is also logistically speaking, if people could come and they could order at home online and then they could return to the store, pick up in the store and return to home. So Amazon has taken advantage of every retail advantage that they have. So location, being able to shop, and being able to mix that in with the online shopping. Now, how did they do that? They bought Jet.com, which is really Amazon's rival. So they're saying, hey, okay, we're the best in retail, but we're not the best in e-commerce. And then you got Amazon says, hey, they have to wake up to this showdown. Mm-hmm. So what Amazon is doing is buying retail stores. So that's where the Whole Foods acquisition came in.
Right.
And now they're trying to get a hand in the retail sector so they can merge the online and retail.
I certainly want to get to the new American Dream Mall, which also opened roughly 10-15 minutes from here without traffic. Okay. We're going to go to a short commercial break. My guest this evening is Jack Friedler of City View Commercial. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
If you're installing hardwood or SPC or WPC vinyl flooring, do it with the highest quality products. PC Hardwood Floors, the hardwood flooring leader, has been supplying flooring professionals with the highest quality flooring materials for over 40 years. The knowledgeable team at PC Hardwood Floors will ensure that your materials will arrive at your job site by our own fleet trucks, hassle-free. With 7 locations in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and next-day delivery, PC Hardwood Floors is the tri-state area's preferred full-service hardwood flooring distributor. Call 866-369-3232 to find out how PC Hardwood Floors can help you find the right hardwood products and finishing supplies for all your flooring projects. For a free consultation, call 866-369-3232. That's 866-369-3232. Or visit us at pchardwoodfloors.com. That's pchardwoodfloors.com.
Are you a life insurance agent or financial advisor? Then this message is for you. At Hidden Gem Life Solutions, we specialize in purchasing life and viatical settlements. We convert unneeded life insurance policies into profit for you and your client as listed. By partnering with the Hidden Gem team, you can make over $50,000 possible commission on a single deal. Visit HiddenGemLS.com and get started. Turn your client's liability into an asset by visiting Hidden Gem's website, HiddenGemLS.com. That's HiddenGemLS.com. Or you can call us at 516-342-5516.
Came across a great commercial real estate opportunity and need money fast? At TBG Funding, we understand the challenge. Waiting months for a bank-issued loan can cost you your project. That's where we come in. Call TBG Funding today at 718-705-9300 to get the funding you need to get your project off the ground. That's 718-705-9300. With loans closed in 23 states and over $800 million in closed loans, TBG Funding can help you close any commercial real estate deal in as little as 3 days so that you can close deals quickly and efficiently. Visit tbgfunding.com to find out how we can help you capitalize on your next opportunity. That's tbgfunding.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. Thank you for joining me. My guest this evening is none other than Jack Friedler of City View Commercial. And we are discussing anything and everything related to the real estate market as it exists today, of course, heading now roughly into 2020. Jack, do you think there will be, I'm just going to ask it straight. You said at the beginning of the show I could ask you anything. And you're the type of guy that we can, you know, you just say it like it is. Will there be malls in the future of America?
So that question is posed to me a lot by my investors. I'm buying retail in today's environment, and they're saying retail is going away. Why are you buying retail right in today's environment? Okay, so firstly, I'm buying retail is because I see the opportunity in retail. There are a lot of retail properties that were built. You know, the first mall came out in, you know, the 1960s. And it became a very hot thing, and people loved it. It was an entertainment spot. It was mm-hmm. a place for the family to go. It was a place for kids to go after school and so on. They opened malls in record numbers, and then after the malls, the shopping centers came along, mm-hmm. and malls were too expensive, so they opened shopping centers. So when the malls became an item, there was a tremendous amount of growth. Now the question is, are they relevant anymore? So I like buying malls just because they are so big and there's so much value out of a mall that even if your anchor store closes, even if tenants close, the land value, the pure mm-hmm. land value is tremendous. But more importantly, you showed me a few articles.
Yeah, Wall Street Journal.
And I got to tell you, let's look at the Wall Street Journal's article just to use this as an example.
A tale of two malls.
A tale of two malls. So there's the malls at Short Hill, which a lot of people here know because it's a great mall. And then there's the Hamilton Mall, which is outside of Atlantic City. It happens to be, I looked at the Hamilton. I've looked at every mall that has a dying name on it because that's where the opportunity is. So let's say a mall like Hamilton Mall, for example, could have a $10 to $15 million bottom line coming out of the property. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that when an anchor tenant closes, like Sears or JCPenney, there's something called co-tenancy. So they close and their leases are tied to the anchor lease. And because it's tied to the anchor lease, it automatic, some of their leases go on lower percentage rent, lower rent, termination, so on and so forth. So you see a mall like the Hamilton Mall, once that anchor tenant closes, the income drastically drops, and a lot of the retailers that are not doing business leave, So my job is to really look at the mall and say, hey, how many people are going to leave, how quickly are they going to leave, and how much is it worth based on that, and then what can you do with it afterwards? Is it only retail, or could be something other than retail? So you have a lot of malls like Hamilton Mall. There's a lot, then you have other malls. So I would say it's really quality versus quantity. If you drive down any highway in the United States of America, mm-hmm. you'll see shopping center after shopping center after shopping center.
Right.
And there's just too much retail. So what's happening is now that the retailers are closing, they're closing their weaker stores. They're keeping up their higher volume stores, mm-hmm. which is where they're making money. Mm-hmm. So those malls are growing. So you look at the mall in Short Hills. It's talking about how great Short Hills. They actually just lost Saks Fifth Avenue 2-3 years ago, but they're going to easily replace them with probably even a better rent because there's business there. There's a lot of sales there. There's business there, and it's thriving. So now when a store has 300 stores and they skim down to 200 stores or 100, they want to be in the best malls because they need to do those sales volumes to make their company work.
Now, what else do you see changing in retail? I mean, for a novice, we've seen even like Walmart, for example, they've done away with a couple of aisles that do not have cash registers anymore. It's just self, and then there's pop-up. So perhaps you could share the variety of ways that retail has been changing.
Right. So you mentioned some. I just want to go into it. So let's look at now what is happening now. Okay, let's start with what's happening now. What's mm-hmm. happening now is, like you said, first of this cashierless checkout. Now, you look at cashierless checkout probably as an inconvenience. Sometimes you're trying to scan.
Right. And the machine's not working.
See you holding your yarmulke trying to scan
Don't just blame it on me. Sometimes the technology doesn't work, right?
Exactly.
Enter it again. It's just not working.
But that is part of the future because ultimately the way we see it is eventually a customer will come to a store with his phone and just buy the item and just walk out. I mean, the phone could put it in his – it could put it on his computer to save for later and he could purchase it at his house. So the cashierless is the beginning – of a change in retail, and you're not going to – the lines are going to be – lineless. Now you're going to ask. You have to understand. Retailers are now competing with online.
That's
people.
Right.
Now online, the logistics on online is much quicker than waiting on a store for.
That's right.
Look at Black Friday. It's not exciting to go black. It's exciting to get a good deal, but it's not exciting to kill each other in the lines and running on top of each other when you could go on your computer
and
find that. So cashierless is something. The other thing we're seeing a lot is the online retailers. The online retailers are now popping up stores in malls and now putting on stores. Why, you ask? The answer is, how do you know the online retailer? So let's say Untuckit, for example. This is the famous one that's opening stores, but we have to know who they are. So they could advertise all over the place, which they do, but there's no better advertisement than where people are shopping, okay? Because you're walking down Fifth Avenue.
So you're talking about the branding effect.
The branding effect. Okay. So the online retailers are opening up in malls or opening up in hot retail locations such as Short Hill malls, mm-hmm. not all malls, the good malls I'm talking, and that brands them. So you're going to see a lot of those stores open. Another thing you're seeing in a lot of these properties is more food and entertainment. Okay. At the end of the day, the job of the real estate owners and the retailers is to take the money out of the shopper's pocket. That's what we do best. Okay. So we have to figure out
admission.
Every which way.
Hey, there's 50,000 people listening, but okay.
That's what we do best. That's okay. Why you have the customer in your mall. He's already shopping. He's already spending money. They're already spending money. Now we have to figure out how they spend the money. Now, if you put them in Sears, they're not going to spend money, or JCPenney, they're not going to spend money. And even Macy's, which is probably the strongest department store, also the stores need to get a little more exciting. So you're going to see a lot more food and entertainment. Movie theaters are starting to have the
different types of
Lazy Boy chairs. The more alcohol and food are being served there. But moreover, bowling alleys, entertainment, and so on. So you're going to see a lot of space being used for that. Another one is pop-up stores. So when retail shrinks, so what happens is the top line and the bottom line get killed. So for example, if you own B and C or D malls, the retailers will leave there. But also if you own property on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, when you're paying somewhere around, I'm embarrassed to say, like $2,000 a square foot, which is things that they paid. Or I remember Diesel paid $2,500 a square foot on Fifth Avenue. It's, you're talking about rents in the millions. You understand? So you're talking about tremendous rents. So,
and of course, they wrote it off as an advertising expense.
So what's happening is when the retail shrinks, retailers are saying, I'm closing Fifth Avenue. I just saved myself a tremendous amount of money, and my bottom line is doing well. But now you're seeing what's called pop-up stores. Okay, pop-up stores is, let's say we're in Manhattan on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. And let's say Giorgio Armani's in town for the fashion show or so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. They could open up a Giorgio Armani location. People walk in. They do an exclusive store on Fifth Avenue.
At a regular store or a store that had been closed, but they just move in for 2 weeks?
A store that has been closed
and they move in for two weeks.
So now you're walking down Fifth Avenue. There's some beautiful buildings that have vacated.
Right.
Beautiful buildings.
Vacancies.
So
yeah.
You're talking about these pop-up stores. And you're going to see pop-up stores happen more often because now you're going to have the online guys wanting to make themselves relevant. They need to open stores during the shows, during the times. Each city has their time, has their busy season. So you're going to see a lot more pop-up stores.
And they don't have to sign a long-term lease for this, right?
They
can go in for a month, 2 months.
And for the landlord, it makes sense because they could get a lot more money for the shorter period. So, you know, a lot of times you see stores, you know, sometimes you walk into a mall at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock. There's nobody there. Really, the retailers are making the money on the weekends and evenings and so on and so forth, but they have to be open an entire day or they have to be open an entire year. You got labor, you got all these things. So pop-up stores just gets the retailer out there. They could pay a few more dollars and get what they want. Number five, I would say, is collaboration we started seeing. So a perfect example is what's going on. Starbucks and Spotify have collaboration now. You could go through Spotify. You could go on the Starbucks app. So you're seeing collaboration between two different companies. So Starbucks could promote the Spotify app, and the Spotify app could promote Starbucks.
Okay, that's online, but what about as it applies to brick and mortar?
Good question. So I would say brick and mortar, now we need to get the brands out. Now people need to understand what is a nice suit, what is nice apparel today. We're used to shopping in the malls, we're used to seeing these types of things. So you're going to start seeing in certain stores them collaborating with other brands, to promote their brand. So you can see a lot of collaboration between brands. And most importantly, what we're seeing happening is the interchange between online and store sales. They call it omni sales, which is you're going to go buy something at your house. It's not going to fit well, but you want that outfit or you want that shirt. You want that suit. So you could go back to the store, or you could just drop it off in the store. And then you could, once you're in the store, you could buy other items. And so omni sales means you could walk into a store and return 5 items. So it's the sales are really coming from the online, but then you go back in the store and then you're buying a few items.
See, I mean, that's a big advantage of a Walmart Jet over an Amazon. You're saying because a person could buy it, let's say on Jet, but go into a Walmart and exchange, whereas Amazon, it's all, you know, it's all by delivery and online, but they can't necessarily. So you're saying the omni is when someone can go online, check it out, then go in, try it on, touch it, feel it, buy it there, or buy it and have it shipped, but they can exchange it online. Omni is where it syncs.
Yes.
Both brick and mortar and online.
And furthermore, I just tell you the last piece of news I read online.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to see Levi's made a deal with Walgreens that you could drop off their deliveries in Walgreens, just like Kohl's made a deal with Amazon. You could drop off the Amazon items in Kohl's. So now you're having that collaboration between each other, and that makes them all the much stronger. So that's what we see changing in today's environment as we walk into stores.
Before we go to a commercial break, I need to ask you straight up, what are your predictions for brick and mortar? Your predictions. Jack's predictions.
Okay. Prediction number one, there's going to be big retail and online acquisitions. For example, Walmart bought Jet.com for $2 billion. Amazon bought Whole Foods for whatever they bought it for. So what's happening? You're seeing brick and mortar trying to penetrate the online world. Right. And you have the online world realizing they need to be on the ground. People have to see them. You can't just have a presence online.
Right.
So you're going to see, number one, very big acquisitions happen. You're going to see a lot of retailers who are struggling a little and so on. They may sell it to a more, a much better online guy and so on and so forth. Also, this is just a side thing. You're starting to see a lot of big retailers come in from Europe and different areas that see the vacuum that's going on with the amount of vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect example is Primark. We started seeing them pop up all over the place in the Northeast over here. They see opportunity. They're getting, you have to understand how desperate landlords are. So they're getting, the landlords are building out the store. In many cases, I'm embarrassed to say it, I pay for their merchandise because you want them open for the holidays.
Wow.
So you're talking about a smart retailer, and they're all smart today, is going to say, hey, you want me to open a store? You're going to have to build it out for me. And not only do you have to build it out for me, if I don't do business, I could leave. So retailers are getting very smart.
Right.
What else do I predict?
Well, anything about social media?
Social media. So the line that they say is social media and retail get married. So, you know, it used to be, you know, how do you look at the next design? How do you look at what's new in the fashion world? You walk by a store and you see a mannequin dressed up. That doesn't really work anymore. So you're going to start having influencers on Instagram and Facebook wearing the store's product and saying, oh, look what I just bought here. And that will drive the people into the store. Now, people are really, their phone is everything today.
That's right.
And they're looking at their phone. So the phone could tell them, let's say you go into a mall and you want to buy a pair of shoes. The phone could tell you, hey, the shoes are in Macy's. The shoes are in this store and that store. And it will give you more of a guidance. It'll give you more of a logistical guidance on how to shop. And you're going to see that interact much more.
Mm-hmm.
Number four is a big one, and that's artificial intelligence.
AI.
And artificial intelligence, people are not really focusing on it and looking how much it will impact the industry, but artificial intelligence is huge. First of all, you know, people are moving in New York. I hate to say it, people are moving out. There's a lot of tough laws
that make a retail business. Especially we're going to retail.
Okay, but if you're paying $15 minimum wage, I have this in some of my properties where they're paying their minimum wage went up. I lost a lot of stores because of minimum wage. If you're going to have amount of stores and your expenses go up but your sales go down, that doesn't work. So what you're going to start seeing, the perfect example of artificial intelligence is in restaurants, because restaurants, we have a lot of restaurant chains that do very well, but the problem with restaurant chains are predictability, right? You could have a good chef in Pennsylvania. You're not going to have a good chef in New York, New Jersey, or so on. It's a big problem. Now, if you're going to have an automatic machine just taking your steak and turning it over at the exact time and putting on the exact spices, which the chain programs, all of a sudden you're going to have so much more predictability and so on. So you're going to start seeing that, and that's going to take over. You're going to have people really manning the what we call robots, or we call the bots,
right,
that they're going to do that. So
AI.
That's something that, those are the things that I see changing in the future.
Anything about Amazon you want to weigh in on?
I see Amazon becoming,
because they've opened some bookstores,
having a much bigger retail footprint. Now,
gotcha.
Am I going to tell you they're going to open bookstores rather than electronic stores? They're going to have they just need to become more relevant on the retail side. You're going to see
a lot
of Amazon acquisitions happening. And if they don't do it, their competition will.
My guest this evening is none other than Jack Fiedler of City View Commercial. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Every accounting firm has a history. The history of Saul Friedman & Company spans 45 years of commitment, dependability, and reliability for our clients. A client at Sol Friedman and Company is never alone in making critical business decisions. Behind each business move stands the full resources of an accounting firm with the financial know-how to inspire confidence and ensure success. Call 718-232-1111 now to find out how Sol Friedman and Company can help you grow your business. There's a reason our tagline is accounting with accountability. That is what we believe in, and that is the ethic we follow. For a free consultation, call 718-232-1111. That's 718-232-1111. Or visit our website at snfco.com. That's snfco.com.
The future that you envision for yourself and your business is totally attainable. You need support along the way. And as entrepreneurs, having a team around you that supports you in achieving what that vision is vital. And that is something that the Covenant Group is committed to delivering.
Most of the times that people come to the Covenant Group, usually it's that they want to enjoy what they're doing, they want to have more quality time, or they want to have financial independence or financial security. My name is Keita Deming.
I'm Norm Traynor.
And we educate and coach entrepreneurs
to build a high-performance business.
We are, in essence, design engineers, and we're helping entrepreneurs design the business that's right for them and then execute.
The idea of having somebody coach you through the hard times of the business and think through what it is to have an inventory of client activity and what it is to build a base of revenue and to think like a business person, it's just not common in our industry.
My name is Mark Parton.
I'm Dean Harder.
I'm Alvin Brown.
I'm Jay Langford.
My name is Luc Godet.
I'm Andrew McKinnon, and I'm building a high-performance business.
And I'm building a high-performance business.
And I'm building a high-performance business.
Building a high-performance business.
Learn more by visiting www.covenantgroup.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Zaflis right here on 77 WABC. In case you're just tuning in, by Tuesday morning, the entire episode will be up at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. That's where you can catch every single guest, every single interview, the amazing content that we've been sharing with you on the airwaves here at 77 WABC over the last 4.5 years. Amazing. We started in mid-15. We're heading into 2020. Unreal. We're going to be closing in on our fifth anniversary in mid-2020. It's pretty cool, pretty exciting. We've got to do something special. We'll let you know as it's as the details start to pan out. My guest this evening, Jack Friedler of City View Commercial, who's sharing his predictions, his insights, his experience with the listeners of Mind Your Business. Jack, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
I love being here.
Thank you. Thank you. So we had you back in 15, roughly 4 years ago, almost to the day that we've had you back.
And a lot have changed.
But you know what? Hey, you want to know if the man is smart? Go listen to that show and you'll see. Basically, what he said came true. So, you know, hey, it pays to stay tuned, especially if you're in the real estate market. And that's my question that I'm going to open to you, now, Jack, is as follows. What would you say is the best sector in real estate? Right? Real estate has so many different areas, multifamily, hotels, shopping malls. What's your take on the best sectors in real estate?
So the best sector is obviously the most stable part of real estate, and that's multifamily. Multifamily, everybody always needs to live. It's predictable. It's much more predictable than the other types. Also, office is pretty predictable. It is pretty predictable, even though I see different changes happening in office in different environments, which is something we could talk about after. Mm-hmm. I would say the most growing part of the industry is industrial. So you understand, retail was always the best sector of real estate. I mean, mm-hmm. you can rent out a store for $10,000 a month, a little hole in the wall in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Industrial, what's happening is that you're having, it's a matter of space. So you were having industrial space at $3-4 a foot. Today, you're starting to see industrial and retail are switching places because industrial is now becoming much more needed because you're having all these online purchases. So mm-hmm. you have logistical space. Anyone who's doing business online has to have that space. And you're seeing retail drop. So I would say industrial is definitely on the up and coming.
Now, how does one understand in terms of multifamily and where people live? Or maybe it applies also to malls. How does one understand different cities, neighborhoods? Is there a way of making sense of all that in terms as it applies to investing in real estate?
Okay. So I travel to a lot of cities.
Right.
Okay. I'm lucky enough to see a lot of cities. I would say a lot of the cities in America are similar. You got middle America, and then you got the coastal cities. The coastal cities like New York, LA, and so on, where it's more anti-business than the other cities that are more pro-business.
Mm-hmm.
But many cities are similar. So what do I look? What does a real estate guy look for when he comes to a city? You're looking for growth. It's that simple. You're looking for growth. Now, how do you look for growth and so on? So I'll give you an example in my multifamily, where we buy multifamily, mm-hmm. how we focus on growth. You have the urban versus suburbanization type of battle going on. What we're seeing is that the younger generation, instead of living out in suburban America with a two-car garage, they'd rather live in the city. You're finding people are getting married much later and having kids much later and so on. So living habits are changing. And because living habits are changing, you're seeing a migration from suburban America to urban America. So if you go to any downtown area, I'm talking from Philadelphia up to Atlanta, Georgia, up to Detroit, Michigan, which is another area, it's unbelievable. What you're seeing is that growth. So I try to focus on that growth, and it's very simple. If you see the growth, just buy it with the lower rents and just wait for the area to get better.
Now, there's a lot of talk in New York City because a couple of months ago, upstate in Albany, they passed all types of laws which apparently are actually anti-landlord and kind of threw the industry upside down. However, you own property in New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Perhaps you could share how the market is reacting. What's your take on that? Meaning, at the end of the day, are there consequences when politicians do things and they don't understand what's going to happen as a result? Are there consequences to their decisions?
I think politicians do know the consequences, but by the time the consequences set in,
they're not anymore.
Exactly.
so they can get away with it,
and they need to get the votes up. Again, what's happening in New York is frightening. First of all, the heart of real estate is in New York City. So the biggest investors are here, the biggest funds are here, and so on. And it really sheds light on the rest of the real estate market. Now, what happened was is they froze. You know, it's a long tail.
Yeah. Yeah.
But long story short, they froze the rents while expenses are continuously increasing. So it disincentivizes people to invest in their buildings and so on. So it's been devastating. Values have dropped 40% in New York. 40% in New York.
So landowners are investing elsewhere.
So what we're seeing is landlords and a lot of big companies, not only are they invested elsewhere, I hate to say it, but they sound disgusted by New York City. I hate to say it because these were the people who built New York City. These were the people who put up the skyscrapers in New York City. And if we can't keep New York City the way, with these big businessmen in our city running these buildings, we're going to have a problem. But on the bright side, mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot of purchases in the rest of the country, and that's definitely a big help.
We talked about how retail is changing. Are there any other markets? I mean, it's not a secret that WeWork is changing how businesses lease space, how they take risks, right? They don't have to just take out 30,000 square feet and build something out. They could just take a couple of desks at a time. Are there any other areas of real estate outside of retail that you've seen drastic changes in?
So let's discuss WeWork for a second. WeWork revolutionized office space. Now, even though WeWork is having problems now, but that's their own problems. What happens to a lot of companies, they grow so quickly, they forget to learn how to grow the company organically and realize where they're making a profit and where they're not. So they just laid out so many different locations that they're not realizing where the money is or not. But they're not having a problem with people signing up, that's for sure. And if you go into WeWork, you start seeing a different way of office space. Now, first of all, the way people work is a lot different than it used to be. It used to be you come to your office, you have a boss of 50 people and so on. There are a lot of companies you could work out of your house, you could work from your computer and so on. So you're finding a lot of different people don't need to come into the office and they can go into WeWork and mm-hmm. so on. But now you're seeing it happen to every office building. Every office building has this live, work, play type of concept. And you're seeing an office building, since people spend so much time, unfortunately, at the office, they want gyms there, they want restaurants restaurants there, they want a social life at the office. So the office environment is definitely changing towards that. But look at the living environment. The living environment in the urban neighborhoods, there's co-living. So what's happening is you're seeing, it used to be you had your own apartment, but now you have a few people living in apartments, especially here in New York City when it's so expensive. So you're starting to see the co-living change that market. And then, like I said, with industrial, you see industrial changing also. Industrial's becoming a very big factor. So every market changes. The good thing for multifamily is changing for the better, and all the others is changing for the better. And you always have to keep your eye on the change, because if you don't, you're going to lose.
That last point is so critical. Whether you're in real estate or not, you always have to keep your eye on changing.
I'll give you an example. Let's say a retailer like Macy's. Let's say they have last season's merchandise in Macy's. Right. They're going to lose. They're going to cut. You can't be one season behind. You have to be on top of your game. If you're not, the way it works is you're gonna lose. Somebody else is gonna step into that place, and that's what's happening to the retailers. The online guys are stepping into their place, and now they have to do what they are doing.
My guest this evening is Jack Friedler from City View Commercial. We're gonna take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Every accounting firm has a history. The history of Saul Friedman & Company spans 45 years of commitment, dependability, and reliability for our clients. A client of Saul Friedman & Company is never alone in making critical business decisions. Behind each business move stands the full resources of an accounting firm with the financial know-how to inspire confidence and ensure success. Call 718-232-1111 now to find out how Saul Friedman & Company can help you grow your business. There's a reason our tagline is accounting with accountability. That is what we believe in, and that is the ethic we follow. For a free consultation, call 718-232-1111. That's 718-232-1111. Or visit our website at snfco.com. That's snfco.com.
Are you a life insurance agent or financial advisor? Then this message is for you. At Hidden Gem Life Solutions, we specialize in purchasing life and viatical settlements. We convert unneeded life insurance policies into profit for you and your client as listed. By partnering with the Hidden Gem team, you can make over $50,000 possible commission on a single deal. Visit HiddenGemLS.com and get started. Turn your client's liability into an asset by visiting Hidden Gem's website, HiddenGemLS.com. That's HiddenGemLS.com. Or you can call us at 516-342-5516.
If you're installing hardwood or SPC or WPC vinyl flooring, do it with the highest quality products. PC Hardwood Floors, the hardwood flooring leader, has been supplying flooring professionals with the highest quality flooring materials for over 40 years. The knowledgeable team at PC Hardwood Floors will ensure that your materials will arrive at your job site by our own fleet trucks, hassle-free. With 7 locations in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and next-day delivery, PC Hardwood Floors is the tri-state area's preferred full-service hardwood flooring distributor. Call 866-369-3232 to find out how PC Hardwood Floors can help you find the right hardwood products and finishing supplies for all your flooring projects. For a free consultation, call 866-369-3232. That's 866-369-3232. Or visit us at pchardwoodfloors.com. That's pchardwoodfloors.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. Thank you much for joining us. We have only around 10, 15 minutes left, but it is enough time for me to ask still some key questions of Jack Friedler of City View Commercial. Thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
It's a pleasure being here, like I always say.
Thank you. Well, we're still going to come at it. And in case you're just tuning in, as you know, by Tuesday morning, this entire episode will be up at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. Jack, let me ask you like this. How would you best describe the different real estate buyers and how they analyze deals and how they analyze deals? But before you answer, so to mention, recently we had on the show Charles Shaw from TBG Funding. They handle smart money for people that need to close quickly. We've had on big experts, senior management, senior leadership at Investors Bank. We've had a lot of key banks and lenders that also are people that look at deals in order to see how high is the risk for us. So that's really my question to you is that, you know, how do you describe that people that invest in real estate, how do they analyze deal? What are the styles that they have? Perhaps you could make sense of all that.
Okay, so let's break it apart quickly. Firstly, there's a difference between lenders and buyers. Lenders are just looking to be safe. Their focus is making sure their position is safe. But then you try to understand what type of different buyers are there in the market.
Buyers/investors.
And yes, there are banks. I mean, there are certain banks that I do business with and certain properties, and there are other lenders that like other properties. So I mentioned to you the different types of real estate, but there are, I would say, four different types of buyers. Buyer number one is a value-driven buyer. A value-driven buyer is somebody that looks at the building and goes, that building's worth $10 million. But the numbers show that it's worth $15 million, but they don't look at numbers. They look at asset value.
Is asset value a branding? If, like, let's say looking at the Chrysler building, they look at the historical perspective? What do you mean by that?
Let's use your house for an example. Mm-hmm. You look at a house.
Right.
Now, if you're going in, you know, if you know your neighborhood, you say that house is worth $1 million or whatever that number is.
Right.
You don't have to look at the numbers to understand the value of the house. So there are certain buyers, they look at buildings, they look at what they're paying per square foot, and they look at that data to buy their property.
Got it.
Then there are more analytical buyers, okay? You know, the perfect example is in my community, there are two different types of Jews. There's the Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazic Jews. Okay. The Sephardic Jews come from the Middle East. The Ashkenazic Jews come from Europe. Mm-hmm. So you see in the way they're buying real estate, the Sephardic Jews, because they come from the Middle East, in that environment, there was a lot of trading going on. So you see that they're very asset. They look at the value of the property, and that's all that matters to them. Now, everything else is just data. And they take it into account, but that asset value is everything to them. Now, you could go, let's say, on the more Ashkenaz side or more on the analytical side, you see a lot of hedge funds doing it and so on. They're going to say, hey, if we could buy this for $100 million but get $99 million of debt with your smart money friend putting up the other $1 million, I come in with no money and I'm making a very nice return and so on. So they're more prone to high risk and so on. Now, you've got also the developers. You have a lot of developers here in New York. They're looking for something to develop and really dig their hands into and make their fees and make their, they have one or two or three projects a year. Mm-hmm. And then you have number four, you just have the regular syndicators. A lot of them are fee driven. A lot of them are looking for commissions and fees and so on. Those are the guys you should be a little careful for because their incentive are fees. You want to always keep people incentivized by making money on that property.
Now, is it okay if we talk, politics is kind of the third rail these days, but at the end of the day, Donald Trump has affected the real estate market. In addition, he made a lot of his money in real estate. So I have a couple of questions that tie in. Is it okay if we talk?
Sure.
All right. So now, first of all, middle America, you touched on it before. How has Trump's, approach we'll call it the Trump economy. How has that affected real estate in general?
So when I used to travel to the Midwest, let's use Detroit for an example. Detroit, nobody would even finance Detroit. It was in such bad condition, but such bad shape.
Right.
What you're seeing is a total change in middle America. Factories are opening again, people having jobs. It doesn't have that depressing feeling it used to have. It was depressing. It was very depressing back in 2012, 13, 14, 15. If you wonder why middle America is so jumpy when it comes to elections, it's because they haven't seen much going on. They've seen all their jobs go to China, go to different countries. So middle America was decimated and now revitalized. So that's something. And then the other thing is, in Trump's tax plan, he came up, there's something called opportunity zones. So, you really want the developers to spend their time in the areas that need help. You know, you don't want them building another skyscraper in New York. So the opportunity zones are zones that were that designated for development. So you could develop in these opportunity zones, which is all, which are all in distressed area, rough neighborhoods, and so on. And now developers are coming and putting up buildings because there's that much tax incentives to put the money in, and so on. So big impact.
Wow. Let's talk about Trump, the fact that he made a lot of money in real estate from a variety of hotels and casinos and buildings where people co-ops, etc. What, you know, what would you say are great valuable lessons from his success in the real estate world that could be applied for anyone out there in real estate?
So firstly, Trump is the, is a guy that really nobody believed in him in the beginning. When he came into New York City, he was laughed at. He started off at the Commodore Hotel, and then he built Trump Tower. If you look at all the projects Trump had in the beginning, tremendous, tremendous risk. I mean, he was risking everything. He really took real risk with his projects, and they did well, the ones in New York City, and then Atlantic City happened. He lost a lot of money. But as you look at Trump's way of buying real estate, always the best location. Look at the Trump Hotel in by the post office in Washington. It's just the best location. So Trump's motto is location, location, location. And then he started learning when he started not wanting to take as much risk,
right,
to leverage his brand and to brand the buildings instead of having to build them and invest and buy them and so on. So. What I learned from him is,
first of all, location, like you mentioned,
I have to say the mistakes he made was taking too much risk. He wanted to make it too big too quickly in the beginning, and therefore there were a lot of projects that went upside down, and he had a lot of risk. But
something else you touched on, a great lesson, is to leverage the branding value. Because, I mean, that got him into the White House, to a big degree.
Yeah, so what really he did was, I mean, he had the Trump brand. Developers came to him. He put his name on the building, and, you know, the price per square foot went up 300-400%. And he made, you know, and he has no risk in the building part of it. So, yes, he leveraged that well.
Moving back to real, you know, to the retail market, because we know how that's on everyone's mind. You know, retail is something that's part of American society, yet it's been, you know, hit hard in a big way. How do you deal? So now I'm going to turn to you as an owner that has malls and, as you say, strip centers, as the owner of City View Commercial. You know, retail stores unfortunately have closed on you. How do you deal with the stress that must be on you in today's fast-changing real estate market?
So it boils down to one word, expectations. Every time people buy a property, there's a period called due diligence period. And then you have your whole life, the education you got over your life. But what happens is, if let's say I'm buying Hamilton Mall, which is a perfect example. If my expectations are that every store is going to stay open, I'm putting myself in a very bad position.
You're not being realistic.
And I will be stressed out. Now, if your expectations are in check and you understand, hey, this is what the plan is, X stores will leave, we'll redevelop this part, this will happen in 2000, whatever, and so on, the stress level is just so much less. And, I'm lucky enough to have a partner that has 200 stores. What I learned from the partner and walking through all the malls with my partner, I finally understand how retailers make money. You know, as a landlord, a lot of landlords just look at a retail store and say, hey, there's a lot of traffic going in, I'm going to buy the property. But they're not understanding, you know, what's going on their bottom line. The good thing about malls, for example, are that retailers report sales. So I could go, whenever I look at a property, I'm looking at every single retailer and how they're faring in sales. I also look at their ratio to rent, how much their expenses are. And I could really, and we've done this enough times, where I could really predict when they're going to leave and how they're going to leave and so on. The only thing I can't predict is a bankruptcy. But even that, I think it's pretty clear who the next bankrupt guys are. I think JCPenney will be a bankruptcy sometime in the near future. I think a lot of department stores are going through a whole different change. Are you seeing department stores even scaled down, like Nordstrom Rack and all the smaller concepts really following the TJ Maxx lead? But again, going back to the stress level, besides the fact that I sometimes could go downstairs to the bar and have a drink.
Okay. Hey, Jack.
No, okay, fine. But after the drink, I'm joking. It's expectations. And you know what? If you're, you know, somebody told
gotta
me
keep your
somebody
head.
Told me when I was younger the best line. He goes, if you're in business and there are no problems, you're not in business. You understand? So this is what we signed up for. I enjoy it as much as you enjoy it. I think it's a challenge for all of us to go into a industry that could, you know, that's having a shakeup. So I enjoy it.
Jack, as we close out the show, any advice for the next generation that you could share?
So the advice I have to the next generation is find yourself a mentor. I think what happened to me and what happens to a lot of people is you start off, you're so eager to do business. You're so excited to get something.
I mean, you mentioned that about Trump, that
yes.
he took risks, he jumped in.
Yeah, and by the way, looking at Trump, he didn't have to take risks. His father had enough money that he could have lived forever. So, but, you know, he had a lot of ambition.
Right, ambition.
But what happens to a lot of younger guys, and it happened to me, you make mistakes. And, you know, it's better not to learn from the school of hard knocks. But if you have a mentor, firstly, a mentor, number one. Now, so in my case, I do have a mentor. My partner's my mentor. He's been in the business many more years than I am. And what I'm learning from him is, number one, discipline. Learning how to say no to a deal. Learning also how to say yes to a deal. Learning how to take some risk. And more importantly, values. I think that when you go into business, you have to build a box of values. You have to say, this is the type of real estate I want to buy, and this is the type of way I want to do business. There are many gray areas that come up in every single business. There are disputes that go on with partners and so on. If you have the right values and you understand from your mentors on how to treat people and how to treat a business deal, you're on the right road to success.
Jack Friedler, City View Commercial, thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Pleasure being here. Thank you.
Amazing. And tune in again. That wraps up a great edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Safliff, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Safliff.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.